What's happening, y'all? This is Ty Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have an assistant basketball coach of the University of Montana.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Reuben Williams, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Show, man.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. We love to start this show off with the wall of hoop movies. Your favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
I chose Love and Basketball, movie I kind of grew up on, kind of young a little bit, and that was a theme of my childhood, I would guess. So Love and Basketball would be the movie for me.
Yeah, man.
I had some runner-ups, though.
Well,
I did have some runner-ups.
We're going to get to your runner-ups. Okay. I always have to bring this up that my wife hates Love and Basketball.
Wow.
She said there's no reason for them to play for each other's heart at the end.
Makes sense. That's the most legendary part.
You know what the crazy thing is? I've never talked about this on this show. There was an event called Mr. Greek when I went to CSUN.
Okay.
And I was part of a fraternity.
Okay.
And I was doing the competition for Mr. Greek, and part of it was to act out a love scene. Me and my wife, before we were married, acted out that scene.
That's crazy.
From Love and Basketball.
That's crazy.
And had the Maxwell playing in the background.
That's crazy.
And so, as much as she hates that movie, she loves that part.
You probably beat her. You probably beat her.
Oh.
That's the problem.
That was hilarious. I dunked on her, and then I gave her a hug.
That is the problem.
It was beautiful. That's
I like that. I like
so,
that.
What are your runner-ups, though?
My runner-up was Above the Rim. Juana Man is always a good one. You got the Six Man over here and Coach Carter, man.
Yeah, no, it's some classics, man.
Got some good ones.
Anytime these movies are on, I watch them.
I feel that.
Poophead,
so. The no skips.
Yes.
I feel that.
Yep. So when did you fall in love with basketball?
I probably fell in love with basketball around 5 or 6. Pops did a good job of kind of introducing me into sports, and that was the ball that I just gravitated towards, you know what I mean, as a young one.
Yeah, and so did you start playing in, like, rec leagues at that age?
Park leagues.
You're one of our younger guests. Mm-hmm. I want you to know that. Most of my guests on here are old heads,
gray
hair,
yeah.
Some old ages. And so you're one of the youngest, so I think it's going to be cool to get a perspective from you, kind of this new generation, mm-hmm. and you're more, inclined to understand this culture now because mm-hmm. you kind of grew up in it mm-hmm. as well. And so you started with rec leagues.
Yep.
Where at?
Park leagues in Carson, California. Del Amo Park is kind of where I started growing the love of the game and being introduced to it. My pops coached me as a young one, so I had that cool relationship with him. And then just kind of progressed from park leagues to AAU. And I think that AAU basketball changed my life because when I was introduced to that, those guys that I played with my sixth grade are still my best friends to this day. You know what I mean? So that was kind of my progression. And, you know, you get to high school and it gets serious, man.
Yeah, so this sixth grade is when you start taking it a little more serious?
Yep.
And taking that with the AAU. And what team did you play for?
Long Beach Gold with Coach Hurd, man. Yeah. So Coach Hurd, and I'll probably say this later on, but Coach Hurd is probably one of the best coaches that I've been around in basketball, period. I've had the opportunity to be around some professional coaches, some college coaches, high school coaches. He is the Lakewood High School freshman coach, and he's probably one of the best teachers of the game.
Wow.
So that's the guy that kind of like got me into real basketball, but also showed me how to teach the game of basketball, and it's like a huge inspiration of why I coach to this day.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And so your dad doing it in the early years, was there a system to it, or would y'all just go out and shoot, or what was training for you? You did come up in the development age where people were starting to have mm-hmm. trainers and going to skill sessions where, you know, my generation, we didn't went outside.
No talk.
So was your dad kind of your first trainer? What was your experience?
That's funny, man. Unfortunately, I did not have that experience. My dad has a baseball background and was doing coaching basketball as an opportunity to kind of get me in it, and I think the relationship process that we, you know, the relationship building process that was involved in that. But I didn't have the trainer. It was just whenever you practice, play as hard as you can. If there's a loose ball, dive on the ball. Like if you run in lines, try and be the first one in line. Like just learning how to compete, learning how to hustle, learning how to play hard was something that he tried to instill. But that was a part of my basketball journey that I, you know, felt like I missed out on. Just because my pops didn't understand the evolution of the game, how you were talking about how my generation was like the first training generation, and you know I'm growing up in basketball, and now my friends are after practice are going to his one-on-one trainer, or he's coming from his trainer, and you know I'm just Pops is showing, you know, dropping me off 15 minutes before the workout, telling me to warm up, you know what I mean? Right. Like, doing that, but I didn't have that experience, that training experience kind of growing up in my childhood.
Yeah, I'm sure that carried over to later in life for you when you started coaching.
1,000%.
Training and learning from that experience, and that's what's important, right? We take those moments in our childhood and want to give that back to
for
the,
sure,
the next
1,000%.
The next kid that we're helping.
That's funny that you said that. So I was introduced to training, to group, like, you know, it was group training my seventh grade year. So I started taking basketball serious sixth grade, and then there was this clinic that was ran by Jared Lloyd. It's called Home Court Edge. He ran this clinic at Cabrillo High School. And, you know, we did it every Wednesday night from 7 to about 8:30, and that was my training. And from that experience, that, like, kind of increase the love of the game, increase the love of the process. Because I had fun in those training workouts, like, you know, kind of build good relationships with friends, got to compete. But now, when I started to coach, I actually started a clinic and replicated that exact same experience because I felt like it was so valuable, you know, for me growing up, and I kind of wanted to give another kid that same experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you find, because now the generation of trainers that we have a stigma of teaching just a bunch of drills and stuff that doesn't apply to the game.
1,000%.
Your experience.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I'm not about to, like, you know, I got into training, right, immediately after coaching. And naturally, you see the cool stuff that these players are doing, and you know, you don't understand that there's, like, a process and how they did that. You know what I mean? So, like, my coaching career is still a learning process, and like, I kind of got into it excited and you know, skipped some steps in regards to how you taught the game, but then, you know, was lucky enough to be around some great teachers, and, you know, I felt like now I've kind of learned from those experiences. If I were to do a clinic again, if I were to do a one-on-one training again, it would be completely different than when I started at 19 than, you know, where I'm at now.
Yeah, 100%, that's good. So you said now it took a level up when you went to high school and you went to Long Beach Pop, right?
I did.
So that's you know, the culture and the legacy of Long Beach Poly and the basketball program. Did you know what you were stepping into? You know,
that's
young, did you know what you were stepping into coming into high school?
So Long Beach has great tradition in sports, and our sports tradition, unfortunately, the foundation of it is Long Beach Poly. So when you start to, like, talk about great athletes, like, you know, Long Beach, the name of Long Beach Poly is always mentioned from when you were youngin' to when it's time to make the choice about high school. So I actually didn't go to Poly out of middle school. I went to Lakewood High School first, and then transferred to Poly. But you feel it, like, you know what I mean? Like, you, even when you're playing against them, like, that week of playing Poly, like, the students that have no connection to the sports are like, oh man, you're playing Poly, like, you know what I mean? So it's like it's a feeling in the community, in the city. And I'm saying, when I transferred there, you got to really see, like, man, this is no joke. This is, like, the real deal. The home of scholars and champions, man. 1,000%. 1,000%.
And what grade did you transfer over?
My sophomore year.
Your sophomore year. Yeah. Okay. And what made you make that jump?
Just kind of wanted to take on the challenge that Poly presented. I felt like, you know, I thought I was a good player, and I wanted to compete against the other good players and see where I stood amongst them. So I felt like that was kind of like the reasoning of transferring. I'm glad, grateful that I did too.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, that's good. And that's how'd your parents feel? Like, what were your parents' decisions in that? Because transferring is so easy nowadays.
Yeah, 1,000%.
And it was for you to challenge yourself and to kind of grow into a situation. How did your parents handle that? And if a parent is trying to figure that out for a kid right now, if they should transfer or not, what are the factors that you should use?
This is a good topic. So my mom, you know, was a Poly alum, so she wanted me to go to Poly from the jump. So she was excited about that. My dad, actually, he was an assistant principal at Lakewood, so that's kind of the reason why I went there my freshman year, because he wanted to make sure I was good academically. So then when I made the move, he was kind of cool for it. But he wasn't the dad that was gonna politic for me. So, like, my dad didn't talk to Sheldon Diggs before I transferred. He didn't talk to the coach. Like, it wasn't none. It was just like a, you know, do your thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was a different situation than a lot of these kids are experiencing now. I think that, you know, there's a time and a place to transfer, but I do think that in high school, if you have a situation where you're, you know, your coach loves you, you're kind of given the freedom to develop, you have, you know, pieces around you that you feel comfortable with, you know, I don't think that you should leave that. I'm big on guys developing their all-around game in high school. I'm not big on a guy transferring because he wants to be in a role. I think that, you know, role definition is for us at our level. I think that in high school you should develop as many skills as possible, and if your coach is allowing you to do that, I don't think that you should chase something else. But I do think that there are situations where your coach might not challenge you, or the team might be very, very bad, or the competition might not be what you need. And, you know, for those specific circumstances, I think that transferring is a solid idea, but I don't think that whenever kids and parents are faced with any adversity, that should be the first thing that they think of. I think that sometimes, like you talk about a lot in these interviews, character building happens in adversity. And if you kind of run away from it, you miss that opportunity, and you miss that opportunity to grow. So I like transferring, but I'll also, you know, be the devil's advocate of why you should stay too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's the thing. I think each individual decision, each kid has their own decision to make, and you have to factor all of everything, right? And I always say, look at it from a spiritual, emotional, mental, physical. All four of those have to be considered when you're making a decision about a kid. And the kid usually don't know what the heck they you 100%. Know your kid better than you. 100%. So it's always on the adult. You touched on something that has been I've been sensitive about. I've been in my feelings about and coaches pigeonholing kids too early. And how you feel about that as a high school coach, like in the high school realm, like you said, you want them to develop the skills, like that is, I don't understand that. As a developer, I don't get it, because I've seen kids literally go from nothing to something in high school in those 4 years, turn them into, you know, develop them into a different player. And as a college coach, how do you see that when you're going to these high schools and you're recruiting the kids and you see a coach doing that? You know, what is your thought process on that?
I'm not opposed. I'm not the coach that thinks he has all the answers. I've learned that there's definitely more than one way for a kid to be successful. I believe that there are definitely kids that have had success by being in a role and then showcasing that they're really elite at that role and then progressing to college and excelling in that role. But like I said, the flip side, like I'm a public school high school coach at heart. And with that, you know, you don't have the resources that you have at private school. So a really good player has to probably play 1 through 5. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that is huge for his development. But I'm not mad if a high school coach takes a 6'6" kid and it's like, hey, man, like, I really want you to play close to the basket. And you know, as he starts to develop those kind of skill sets, then you progress his role. But, you know, I'm not mad at that.
I like that. I could hear that perspective. Mm-hmm. I always want a rhyme and a reason.
Yeah.
And I feel like coaches get lazy. Like,
1,000%.
Place you in a system, and this is what you have to do for us to win. When yes, that's true, but they also can do other things. And if your job is to prepare a kid for college, you're doing them a disservice if you're pigeonholing them too early. If it's somebody, you could tell some people, you know, taller kids just don't move well. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you're gonna be stricken to 100%. A certain role, you know, rebounder, shot blocker, you know, screen setter, because of how you move and how you flow and you work on your skills, and it's not getting there. We'll still continue to work on it, but this is probably what you're gonna do. So I see that. I think coach looks at a kid and says, oh, that's what you are.
Yeah, I see that too. But I also think that, like when they do that, just because a coach is doing that, you might not know what his 4-year plan is. So I think that there are times where parents can be like, man, I got a 6'6" son. Why is this coach putting my son as a big? Well, maybe this is the skill sets that he needs to develop right now, you know, for him to be successful later on. But if you are in a situation where your high school coach is pigeonholing you, because sometimes we can't change how a high school coach moves, you know what I mean? Then AAU is a great opportunity to be intentional on which teams you choose to help your development. Maybe I might not choose a team that's gonna put me in the same role that I was in for my high school for however long, you know, for these next 3 to 4 months. I might be on a team where I can develop these guard skills, or I can develop playing closer to the basket, or I can develop being a point guard. I just think that parents and kids have to be intentional on what they do in these 3 years of AAU and high school too.
That's
important.
The word of the day.
That's important. That's important, man.
Yes. No, that's good. That's good. So going over to Long Beach Poly, you wanted that challenge. Mm-hmm. Did you get that challenge? And what was your experience like?
This is great. I definitely got that challenge. Long Beach Poly showed me that there are a lot of really good basketball players, and that there's levels to this. And I think that for kids that have aspirations to be good at sports, when you're met with that opportunity where you really see that there's levels to this, you have two options, right? Like, you can either quit or you can keep going. I chose to try to keep going and keep fighting. I feel like that helped me in my coaching journey too, because I know what it feels like to be the kid that's trying to get on the floor. I know what it feels like to be the kid that's on the floor. I know what it feels like to want the approval of your coach. Like, I know what all that feels like. So it helps me when I coach different kids. Like, I got the opportunity to go to Poly. So at Poly, I played against Drew Buggs, KJ Fagan, Cameron Morrell, Chris Sullivan. Like, these are all dudes, you know what I mean, that like had good high school careers and went on to be successful in college. And that was like a phenomenal experience for me, because it gave me the opportunity to know how to coach that kid. You know what I mean? Because I feel like in our journeys in basketball, you know, there'll be times where you're the best player on your team, there'll be times where you're the worst player on the team. But there are some really, really elite players that have never experienced trying to fight to get on the floor. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I think my basketball journey is unique because I've had all those experiences. And I feel like that it's kind of helped me in my coaching career.
I think the earlier you face adversity, the easier it's going to be when you get to college, where everybody is the best player
for
on the team and you're competing for that spot.
For sure.
In highly competitive environments, and you're playing against now 24, 25 year olds, or bro, even in there with you, and you're coming in best player in your state, maybe.
Yeah.
But you're 19.
You gotta learn how to take, man. Like, it basketball, you know, whatever environment you're placed in, right? You can be the best player in, let's say, you're the best player in Long Beach. When you get placed in a camp where it's all the best players in Southern California, to be the alpha, you gotta learn how to take that. You know what I mean? And some kids aren't comfortable with the take. And, you know, Coach Flowers was on the podcast, and he was just talking about how, like, you know, in women's sports, how he was encouraging girls to be dogs. You know what I mean? Like, that's encouraged. I think as we are teaching young men in our sport, you know, it's okay to take that. It's okay to be the guy. It's okay to come in and look at other good players and be like, I'm gonna be the best guy today, and I'm gonna make sure you're not. Like, that's okay. That's okay, man.
That's how you build it.
1,000%.
Yep. So, sophomore year, you play. What level did you play?
I played varsity. So I played varsity all 3 years.
You was lucky
enough.
Was
lucky
you
enough.
Good enough to play varsity.
Was lucky enough, man. Was lucky enough. We had really good coaches, good team. I was just lucky I got to.
What was your calling card? What did you do well?
I defended. I was a passer. I was a good passer. I was a leader. I was vocal, playmaker. But I did turn the ball over. I did turn the ball over. So, you know, that's something that as young players we have to learn.
Yeah,
good absolutely. Experience though.
And so a key thing that you said is leadership, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is for smaller guards.
Yeah,
that is the key.
It's important
to get on the
it's
floor,
very important. Defense
and that leadership skill. You talk about your dad being your coach,
yep.
Having your other coach with the Long Beach Gold.
Yep.
What else do you, you know, just attribute that leadership skill to, and what kind of, you know, I want to say, what situations were you put in to where you had to establish that leadership early on?
It's a good question. So, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, you know, in elementary school, my mom would take me to school, like there would be conversations of you're a leader, not a follower. You know what I mean? So like getting that affirmation as a youngin gave me a lot of confidence when I was surrounded by my peers to lead. Because I was always told that that's who I was. I think that experience kind of, you know, shaped who I am now and kind of why that was my calling card as a player is just, you know, my mom and dad engraved that into me, like to be a leader, not a follower. And, you know, that's kind of part of the character now.
Yeah, no, that's dope. junior year.
Okay.
Moving through high school. Yeah. So junior, senior year, yep. more opportunity.
Yep.
You know, develop as a player.
Yep.
What was your experience? What levels did you guys reach as a team?
So my sophomore year, we won CIF. Junior year, we had a good CIF run. I want to say we lost in like the second or third round. Senior year, we lost in the CIF championship and then lost in the CIF state championship. So we had a good team, but there were small things that we just didn't do, and that probably happened in the offseason that led to us losing those games at the end of the season.
Yeah, how bad did those hurt?
See, think about them all the time. Yeah, you know I mean, not all the time, but still think about them to this day. Of just the opportunities and the pride that comes with being a winner. You know what I mean? So like whenever you come back and you know you talk about things that you could have gotten, like man, we could have been three. You know, we could have won three CIF championships. We could have got three rings in our times at Poly, but instead we just. Left for one.
How do you, as a leader, mm-hmm. and now as a coach, how do you take those could have been moments and turn them into something positive?
You don't stop thinking about them. I'm not a guy that forgets failure, because I think that is, like you said, it's a good thing to lean on when you're in those moments where you need that motivation and inspiration. So you don't stop thinking about them. And as a coach, you know, for us last year, we lost. And the Big Sky championship game to go to the NCAA tournament, but I don't let our players forget about that. You know what I mean? Like it's what happened. So when you attack a workout, you have to attack that workout knowing like, hey man, if you'd have done a little bit more in the offseason, maybe would have been in the NCAA tournament. So you don't forget about them. You do not forget about them.
Turn it into intensity.
Have to.
I like that. Turn it could have been moments into intensity.
Have to.
Yeah. Dope. So a college recruiting experience, you know, in Southern California, you got a lot of good players.
It's a lot of good players.
The melting pot for
got a lot of good players
in the world.
Yes, sir.
LA got it.
Yes, sir.
Everybody else.
Yes, sir. Talk to it.
So what was that experience like for you? And, you know, where did you end up for college?
So I ended up playing at Willamette University, Division III.
Teach everybody how to say that, because everybody.
when I first was being recruited by him, I used to call it Willamette, because I feel like that's how it was spelled. And then when I got to the school, I was correct that it is Willamette University. So that's where I went my freshman year. I was recruited by kind of Division III's all throughout, really. I had a couple D2s. I got lucky. Shout out to Coach Impleman. That was the only Division One, only Division One coach that recruited me. I was kind of like a plus one with my boy Drew, so that was one of those situations. That was kind of like my process. I lived in the West Coast Elite High Academic Camps. You know what I mean? Like I lived in the West Coast Elite camps or whatever, because I played for Ryan my freshman sophomore year. So just kind of had that experience and was lucky enough to be at a camp where Willamette saw me and. The rest was history.
Nice. So yeah, let's talk about that one. So your AAU experience mm-hmm. through high school.
Yeah.
So you were at West Coast Elite mm-hmm. freshman, sophomore
yep.
year. High academic team.
Yep.
And
no, so actually a freshman. So I was lucky enough to be on my freshman year with the Under Armour team.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And then sophomore year kind of was like both teams. And then junior year played. I'm sorry, sophomore year played with LA Elite.
Okay.
Junior year played with LA Elite.
Oh, nice. So, yeah. Russ.
Well, Russ. Oh, my guy, Russ. Yeah. So I tell Russ all the time, like, first off, Russ gave me an incredible opportunity. I'm speaking to you. Gave me an incredible opportunity to play AAU basketball and just kind of, like, develop. But then gave me my first coaching opportunity. So Russ kind of got me into this, and I owe him so much. I give him a lot, but that's my guy, man.
No, for sure. I wasn't expecting. I didn't know Russ could talk that well.
Yeah.
I know that man, he needs to talk short.
1,000%.
Damn,
he's elite.
The most amazing podcast that we had.
He is elite.
Great, man. Yeah, so good having him on there. Great dude. And that's cool. We'll circle back around that, you know, when we step into mm-hmm. the coaching part of your journey.
Cool.
But that AAU circuit and opportunity, right? You talk about how you went and got an opportunity
yeah.
with LA Elite. How important is that for a lead enough guard, because you win the CIF titles, you're playing at Poly on mm-hmm. varsity.
Mm-hmm.
When the school is good,
yeah.
and like y'all was weak.
Real talk.
And what is that decision for those people who you probably could go play on the EYBL. Mm-hmm. You probably could go
play I couldn't play on the EYBL.
No.
Talent-wise,
nothing?
No. Those are like, see, I think that like this is a part to where some of our people in our Southern California basketball community get messed up. Like, you gotta be honest with yourself. You know what I mean? Like there's some really, really good players. Like, there was, even my year, there were some really, really good players. I couldn't go play on the EYB. I just knew it. Like, I was fighting to get on the Under Armour team. You know what I mean? Like, that was my experience. Like, yeah. So then I knew that for me, to maximize my basketball skill, I had to play. I couldn't just be on a good team that had a good name and I was getting all this good gear. That's why Russ was so huge for me, because I went to go play on an independent team where I just rocked out. You know what I mean? Like, the things that my high school coach would get mad at me during the season, I could do that with Russ. And I can, you know what I mean? Like, I can rock it. Yeah, like, I can turn the ball over a couple times and I'd be like, oh man, I'm coming out the game. I can just grow from that. And I feel like that experience is huge. And I think that some people in our space in basketball do kids a disservice. They give kids a label too young. Like, a guy has a good game in high school. Now he's going to be a high major guard in 2 years. And yeah. So now he's moving this spring and summer with the intent of, man, I need to play with whoever thinks that I'm a high major guard. And, you know, if you don't think that, I'm not going. Like, yeah. If I got to compete with so-and-so, I'm not playing. Like, so it kind of, it messes us up because we're just not truthful to ourselves. And yeah. I think that the reason why we lack that honesty is because we lack perspective. We see Southern California basketball, and like you say, we think that this is the pinnacle of it, which I believe too. I believe that we have, you know, a lot of talent.
Yes.
But there's levels to this, man. It's like you go into other parts of the country and dudes might be stronger, dudes might, you know, like, it's just levels to this. So we have to move in our basketball journey with honesty, but then people around a good player like yourself, we have to be honest with you too. Like if I just saw somebody tell you're gonna be a high major guard, I'm like, hey man, like, you know, you probably might have that, but you got a long way to go. So if I were you, I would just focus on the work. I wouldn't focus on the exposure. I would just focus on the work.
They'll find you. As a college coach now, do you find diamonds in the rough? Do you see that kids that
that's
are
a good
not
question.
That, like, when you go watch the independent circuit, it's like, man, that kid could be playing up. Like, but I get why he's on his independent team now, or, you know, everybody's journey is different. You hear the Derek Whites of the world.
Yes.
Right? D2, and then gets his opportunity,
yeah.
Right? That's my thing. Is like, you're going to play yourself into your opportunity.
I agree.
You're supposed to be a Division I player, you're going to get there.
And especially in this day and age of college basketball, yeah. Like, let's just say I were to see a kid in an independent circuit, right, or independent game, and he's hooping. He's probably playing against another circuit team. He's hooping against that dude. Probably, you know, I would, let's say I locked in on him, I started recruiting him, and it just didn't happen. And he ends up going Division II. And he kills at Division II.
Right. Still on your radar.
You know what I mean? Like, if he hits the portal, he has a head start, essentially. You know what I mean? Because he just chose to play an independent team, rock out, got on coach's radar. Maybe it didn't work out the first time around, but man, you end up graduating from a Division I and having a successful career. You know what I mean? So I think that stories can happen like that more in this age than they could previously.
So even as adults, right, we always have those friends who are super honest with us. And those are the closest people to us,
yes.
Right? And that where we accept that honesty.
Yes.
And it's very hard to do even with those people sometimes,
very.
Right? So as a kid in this space, or a parent of a kid in this space, finding that person to trust, right? Because a trainer's gonna blow smoke sometimes to get the money from
1,000%. Wow, it's a good perspective.
Oh, you're a Division I player. Or you're gonna have the coach who is, you know, taking confidence away from my kid, but actually being honest, but also putting the work in to get the kid to that next level. How do you discern that?
From the parent's perspective, I think that a truth teller has to build the relationship before you can be a truth teller. So from a parent's perspective, be intentional on the relationship building process with the people that are around your son, the trainer. build a relationship with the trainer. The coach, build a relationship with the coach. If there's anybody else, AAU coach, build a relationship with them. Because through that relationship, you will start to tell who's real, like who's genuine, who really cares for your son or daughter, you know what I mean? But I think as parents, you have to be diligent in that relationship building process and don't make rash decisions. Don't, you know what I mean? Like, don't, please, just don't do that. Don't do that.
Take your time.
Yeah,
right?
Take your time.
And start early.
Yes.
Right? I think that courting starts in that middle school phase.
Okay. Like,
start looking at the high schools in your area. Start looking at the AAU teams on
that's
the high school level to assess and to, there's an assessment process to that, all right?
That's interesting.
I provide that to people like, hey, man, go, this is what you need to go look for when you, I got assessment when you go visit college. Mm-hmm. There's an assessment of what's going on, and I tell parents this a lot now because I have become this sounding board for the transfer portal in high school basketball in Southern California, which I don't like necessarily, but it's happened. And what I tell people is, like, trust your mom gut. Your mama love you more than that basketball most of the time in most situations. There are some mamas out there who are crazy and doing it for the wrong reasons. But for the most part, right? And they're like, I just don't know. Trust that gut. Because I'd rather you trust that mom feeling that you have, that intuition that us men sometimes don't have, that women have for your kid.
Okay, so let's get into this transfer talk.
Okay.
With kids transferring, right? Are you transferring to have a good high school experience? Are you transferring because you think this is gonna help you get to the NBA? Are you transferring because this puts you in the best position to get a college scholarship? Like, I think that a lot of times, let's kind of do this backwards, right? Okay, I wanna play college basketball. Or I don't. I love playing basketball with my friends. Playing basketball, playing for a coach, and you know, he's probably not playing me as much as I think I should be playing. I'm a freshman, by the way.
On varsity.
Freshman on varsity.
Cool.
Okay. I'm probably not playing as much as I think I should be playing. That's not the time to transfer, in my opinion. Like, you know, like in my opinion, like we, like, if the intention is we're just having fun, we're just hooping, like, let's keep it like that. Let's keep it fun. Like, a lot of times people start to do too much and make this a thing that it's not. And, you know, you set your kid up, you transferred him three times, and now he's not playing college basketball at all. So what did you do that for? You know what I mean? Like what are we doing?
Most of those situations to me is because the parent is trying to live vicariously through the kid.
And that's tough for me. That's tough. As a young guy. Remember, I'm young. There's a lot issue. I don't know.
I call it out. I think that's the problem. There's not enough people who call it out. Like, hey, I do this.
Well, come on, man.
I've done this. And if you don't want to hear it from me, cool. I'm going to pass you Ruben's number, who's been doing this.
Real talk.
Who does this, right?
And that's so, the value of truth tellers, though.
That's it, is getting that trusted source. And that's what I try to build in the community, is like, hey, you can trust my basketball knowledge and decision-making for the most part.
I love that.
Have I made a mistake? Absolutely. I told people to go to the wrong school at the wrong time for the wrong reason. I've done it.
Yeah.
Not of recently, though. Like, most of the time, it's my whole thing now, it's about development. And when I say development, I'm just talking about your basketball skill. I'm talking about, is this coach invested into you as a person? Your job as a coach is to teach, is to mentor, is to be an uncle style person to these kids now, because the seriousness and the amount of time they spend with basketball and developing this, there has to be a balance on their character, on their mental, on their emotional state. And we miss out on those opportunities to develop good people so they could become like you later on. That's what
I
happened.
Think we
coaches
miss out
invested
on
invested into you.
1,000%.
Now look at you as a coach.
1,000%.
Dog, you not the impact you're about to have on so many people's lives through your whole coaching journey, because your people invest into the whole person,
1,000%,
not just the basketball group.
I think we miss, but there are some colleges that miss out on that as well. I think that, you know, college basketball is such a transactional game now that the true relationship building process and the mentorship is kind of fading away. But it, like, it's so important, man. Like, because we're not out of a 15-man roster at our level, we'll be lucky if one of these guys touch the NBA.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, granted, Coach Trav does a great job, so 5 out of those 15 are going to play professional basketball. But, I mean, for those 10, and even those 5, once they stop playing, like, their character is what carries them for the rest of their lives. And they're going to be older longer than they'll be younger. You know what I mean? So, like in that stage of their life, like, you, like, what we do in this stage impacts that stage. And I think that we have to be intentional with that word again of how we're, like, how we are investing into these youth and the young men that we get to coach, young men and women that we get to coach.
Yes, 100%. No, that's the answer. Bro. It's like, hey, at least a little bit, even if you're a transactional person, yeah, man, check in.
1,000%.
See how the kid is doing, man.
1,000%.
See what's going on at home. Like, it can't always be about wins and losses.
Real talk, especially at the high school level, bro.
People think it is, though, because you could be a winner. I see coaches who do both, and they win at a high level, and they invest in the people at a high level. We talked about some of these coaches before we started the show. It's like, they do both, and it's possible, but it's going to take intentionality from the coach to put that forward to, it's not about you. Like,
which is hard.
It has to be selfless.
Which is hard. It's hard to, you know, like, yeah, if we're being honest, like,
go get another profession then.
Yeah, like if we're being honest, a lot of coaches, not just high school, their ego is attached with the program. You know what I mean? Like, it's attached with it. So it's hard to put that away. It's hard as a coach to detach from the wins and losses and attach to character.
You show me a coach who was marginally intelligent in basketball, who invested into the kid's character, who lost.
That's real. Wow, that's real.
Go show me somebody like that.
That's real.
Because we have it backwards. They're like, well, if I win, then I'll get
that's
the kids,
real.
And then I can invest.
That's real.
No. Invest into the kids first.
That's real.
Keep on learning about basketball, and then you're going to grow.
That's
it.
Real.
It took years for Wooden to win. It
real
took
talk.
Years for Coach K to win, but they were their character developers.
Real talk.
And then they were winners the rest of their life.
That's
and
powerful.
Developed winners. And so that's the part that we miss, is that we want the microwave instead of getting in the oven and let it bake.
1,000%.
So, yeah, that's...
Impatient, that's, man. Impatient. It is what it is.
All right, college experience. So you were in college for a short stint.
Yes, yes, yes.
What happened?
Yes, so I played at Willamette for a year. And before I went to Willamette, obviously I came from Long Beach Poly. We're winning. Was a tradition, right? Winning, that's what we did. And at Willamette, it was a different experience. And I didn't really know how to handle that. Especially kind of the summer before I went off to college, Russ allowed me to coach a 17U team. So
wow.
I'm
as a 17-year-old.
I'm 18. I'm my senior year, right? Like, and I'm 18 coaching 17U,
wow.
And it was an incredible experience. I won the Compton Magic Memorial Day tournament, so I won that. I'm like, oh man, I can do this thing. I'm kind of nice at this. So I kind of go into, you know, that season with that in my back pocket, with like, I love playing, but I had a lot of fun coaching, and I had a lot of people tell me that I could, you know, do this as a profession. So I was one foot in, one foot out. So the season kind of goes, and I'm blocked in as a player, but then, you know, we don't have the season that we want, and once the season ends, it's just time to reflect and all that. And
so you have a terribly losing season?
Like,
is that what we get into? What was it? What's the record? Talk about it.
Probably 4-5 games. If that.
Oh, I thought you said 1 and something.
Oh, no, we probably won 4-5.
But still, single digits.
It was tough, man. It was tough because I've never, ever experienced that in my life. Like, I've been lucky enough to be a winner in a lot of different areas, right?
Yeah.
So kind of get that, and then the season ends, and you just kind of have time to reflect. I'm away from home. I'm, like, homesick. I'm not feeling the vibe up here. I really want to coach, so I just come back home, man. So I came back after the year ended, came back home, and I was still 1 foot in, 1 foot out with the plan, but I had to get my degree. So I played a brief stint of JC basketball at Irvine Valley for the summer, and it was like, man, I'm just all in with this coaching. So then that's why I kind of got straight into coaching at Poly. Shout out to Diggs, he kind of let me coach there, and that was that.
How young were you when you knew that you wanted to coach, though?
18.
Oh, sorry, when you did that?
So, I mean, like, so my in high school, man, I actually coached my middle school team. So I was at Poly like my sophomore and junior year, and I went to Hughes Middle School, and I would coach the boys for the 6 week period that they had their season. You know what I mean? So it was cool. Like, I got introduced to it, but as a point guard, you're always coaching. So it's not like it was a flip. It was a switch I turned on. It was just I went from coaching with the ball in my hand to coaching on the sideline and having an impact in that regards. So that was kind of my little
that's
step.
Dope. Yeah. That's dope. And what do you think transferred from the game to your coaching that was so impactful?
Competitiveness. I learned. So transferring from Lakewood to Poly taught me humility. So I learned that as a player. Now I've carried that in a coach. Because you can have one good season, but if you don't do the things that got you to that point or turn them up for the next season, you won't have that. And I think that humility allows you to kind of stay consistent in your process and diligent. So I already talked about competitiveness, togetherness. You know what I mean? I think as a point guard, it's your job in the heat of the battles to bring guys together to figure that out, and just communication.
Yeah,
I think would be those four from a player that kind of translated as a coach.
Dope. And okay, so your first coaching was at Poly.
Yeah.
And just let's go through your chronological coaching journey.
Okay, let's do it.
Started at Poly.
Let's do it.
At LA Elite, really.
Okay, let's do that. Let's do that. So 18, LA Elite, AAU. 19, Long Beach Poly. / West Coast Elite.
Okay.
Ryan Silver did so much for my young coaching career. So when I was coaching with them, I was assisting JJ Prince, who's the head coach at Viewpoint. I was his assistant for the Under Armour team, and just got to learn from incredible coaches in that program. So 19, Long Beach Poly, West Coast Elite, 20, Long Beach Poly, West Coast Elite. And then 21, kind of Cal State Fullerton. I was a student manager at Cal State Fullerton, so left Poly. Shout out to Danny Sprinkle, hired me as a student manager, Duke Player Development at Cal State Fullerton. Did that for 2 years, got back into Poly, was the assistant coach at Long Beach Poly again for a year, and then got the gig as a GA at Arkansas.
Man.
Yeah, man. Awesome. So, I was grinding, you know what I mean? So, like, when I left Cal State Fullerton, I was extremely grateful for Dedrick Taylor giving me the opportunity to be a manager and kind of get that experience of being involved in college basketball. But the young and dumb me, I just wanted to coach. I felt like I would improve as a coach getting those reps coaching instead of, watching the guys and being involved in it. Which, if I could do it over, I would just stay locked in and, and not kind of go out. But I did that, and I'm grateful that I did it because I got those coaching reps. Like people don't understand how valuable it is coaching AAU. It might not seem like it's a serious, game, but as a coach, you got subs, you got to manage subs, you got to draw ATO, you got to – so it's a lot that you have to do on the fly with limited practice. So it's a lot that you have to do, bro.
And that's what coaching is.
That's what it is. You know what I mean? I felt like I needed those reps. I felt like I needed reps leading a practice. So, Coach Diggs giving me the opportunity to coach at Poly and really giving me that freedom to coach. It was great for me, man. So that was kind of my journey into coaching. But I felt like I needed those coaching reps. So I left Fullerton for that.
Got it. And so where did your first vision of how high of a level you wanted to coach come in?
The first day, Ryan Silver posted a picture. I was like, hey, Ruben Williams, take this picture. So I took a picture. He makes this caption like, man, Ruben Williams be a Division I head coach. And you know how Ryan does. He's gonna be great. He'll be a Division I head coach. So I'm seeing that, and I'm like, wow, that's what I want to do. You know what I mean? Every Sunday he would give me 10 college coaches' numbers. And I'm calling these 10 college coaches, texting them, hey, we got these players. But I'll, having an opportunity for me to network. And I just went on an emailing rampage. My name is Ruben Williams. I have aspirations to coach Division I basketball. I would love to connect and get on the phone with you if possible. And I probably had 50 calls. And the first one that kind of started everything was John Impleman. So the same guy, only guy I recruited me to Division One was the first guy that answered my email for that call, and just gave me game, man. Like I'm asking him, like, you know, how did you get here? What advice do you have? What should I be doing? Like, and I'm in this stage of my life, but I want to be where you're at. You know what I mean? Like I'm just trying to get game, and I was lucky enough to approach that with humility, get great feedback, but also build great relationships.
Yeah.
And got affirmed in those conversations, like, oh man, you're on the right path, like you're doing a really good job. And those experiences led me to believe, like, okay, we can do this. We can, if we stay persistent, if we continue to be a good person, you know what I mean? Like if you just serve others to the best of your ability, you know, hopefully one day it'll all work out. And I was just lucky enough, met the right people, and it started, man.
I remember watching your journey from that day Ryan Silver posted you is when I started probably following you.
I appreciate that.
And maybe before. I remember you at Poly. But I guess that was around the same time, yeah. Right? And so I just remember seeing your journey, and one day I'm like, dang, he's at Arkansas. Like
out of nowhere.
Man,
like out of nowhere.
It's not out of nowhere. It's the it's the phone calls and the emails.
1,000%.
And that's 1,000%. That's the part people don't see, man.
1,000%.
As hard as you worked as a player to develop, you work just as hard as a coach.
I work double as hard because from a player, I learned that whatever I was doing as a player wasn't good enough. Mm. You know what I mean? Because I would have still been a player. So when I approached this, it was like, oh no, like I got to, and I was lucky enough, my freshman year, Nate Colville, who was the assistant at Willamette, drove me to a coach's clinic at a USA basketball coach's clinic in Portland, Oregon, an hour away from Salem. And at this coaches clinic, I heard this speaker by the name of Dave Eastman speak. And in him speaking, he said the thing that made him the most successful, it's like, man, I just outworked and outprepared everybody. Hmm. So I listened to that speech at 18, and I'm like, bet, that's our mantra. That's how we're going to approach this. Like, you see somebody that might be in your lane, you better outwork them. If you're in any situation where there has, like, preparation has to be, like, you have to prepare, you better be the most prepared. Like, so I feel like that kind of helped me get to where I'm at now. But I got, you know, like you said, the humility part, like, whatever got you there, you got to turn it up to get you to the next spot. So yeah. That's kind of where we at right now.
That's awesome. So yeah. Landing that GA spot at Arkansas, mm-hmm. What actually happened to get you there?
So when I was a manager at Cal State Fullerton, I was there for 2 years. So the first year the assistants were Danny Sprinkle, John Smith, and Anthony Santos. Danny Sprinkle gets the head coaching job at Montana State. John Smith gets the head coaching job at Cal Poly. So we hire Brandon Dunton and Gus Arginal, right? Two guys that worked from us at Nevada, you know, relentless work ethic, both elite at what they do. But I got to work for them for a year. So I built a relationship with Gus, had a good relationship with BD. So then, you know, that relationship was solid. When Gus got to Arkansas and that, you know, he was there for a year, the summer happens, I guess they have some GA openings. I see him at the Final Four.
Location, right place, right?
I see him at the Final Four. Mind you, I paid for the Final Four out of my own pocket. Like, it was just like, oh, this is the high bay where the coaches are gonna be at. You know, I'm trying to get in, I got a network. Like, on pocket, out of there, the Final Four, at a social, and just so happened to run into him and his wife. And when we talk, we don't talk anything Arkansas. Just, how are you doing, man? How are you? What do you know? What are you up to? You looking to get in? Yeah, man, I would love to. I would love to get in. That's why we're here. She's like, all right, you know, calls me in a couple weeks, tells me about the opportunity. I'm like, man, I would be there tomorrow. If you need me there tomorrow, like, I would be there tomorrow. But I was lucky enough to kind of have a couple, you know, probably a month to prepare, and drove out there. And that's where it started, man.
That's awesome. That's mm-hmm. awesome. And where did you finish your degree?
Cal State Fullerton.
At Cal State Fullerton, yeah. You finished your degree mm-hmm. there. What did you get your degree?
Communications with the emphasis on advertising.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
So it helps you now in basketball. 1,000%. 1,000%.
Okay. And then did you end up getting your master's while you were at Arkansas?
I got 1 year completed.
Okay.
So now I got 1 year left, and I'm waiting to get that finished.
Yeah, all good. All good. No, that's part of the journey, yeah. Right? Is completing what you started.
1,000%.
And just using that opportunity to get where you're at now. Like, you went from a GA to an assistant mm-hmm. in a year, mm-hmm. which doesn't always happen for everybody. And so, coaching at a school like Arkansas, with the players that you had at Arkansas? What
Unbelievable. I used to pinch myself every day. Just like I couldn't believe that like this was it. You know what I mean? Like, cause then, you know, I played Division III basketball, like didn't have this journey that some of these guys that are in this position have. So I was just lucky to be there, man. And yeah, learned a ton. We had some really good coaches. Obviously Coach Muss, who's the head coach at SC, is probably one of the best defensive coaches I've ever been around. Just elite, like relentless at that, just elite. Was Keith Smart was on that staff. He was a former NBA head coach for the Golden State Warriors, Sacramento Kings. Gus Arginal, who was the head coach at Cal State San Bernardino now, just got to the Final Four. So I was just lucky to like learn from like really, really good coaches, but good coaches with no egos. Like it was good coaches that, oh, come on, young fellow, like let me help you out. This is how we do things, or this is how you should be doing this. You know what I mean? Just like coaches that were willing to inspire, develop, invest. You know what I mean? So that was my experience with them. But then obviously we had some really good players. So, you know what I mean? Nick Smith, Anthony Black. I'm just talking, these are like our freshmen that we signed. Jordan Walsh, these are McDonald's All-Americans. So, you know what I mean? And then that freshman class, Darian Ford, Barry Dunning, Joseph Pinion, those are all relative, like, you know, State Player of the Year. But then, you know, the NBA guys, like Ricky Council is now playing for the 76ers. Obviously, Anthony Black was lottery. Nick Smith got drafted to the Charlotte Hornets. Like Jordan Walsh got drafted to the Boston Celtics. I've got Trevor Brazil who's about to get drafted. Like it was just an incredible experience that I just didn't take for granted at all, man.
That's good. How did you not take something for granted?
You work. Like you show up. You're the first one in office. Like you leave late. If there's somebody that wants to get some work in, you're always available. And like you just take it personally. Like you just I took it to where I felt like I did not belong there. You know what I mean? Like I'm like, wow, like this dude played here. Ronnie Brewer played in the NBA. Like Ruben played 1 year of Division III basketball, was a manager at Cal State Fullerton. Like, I don't belong here, man. So let me just work. Since I don't have the resume that you guys have, let that try to speak for me. So that's kind of how I approached it, man.
Man, that's awesome. So 1 year Arkansas, yep. Musselman leaves, right?
Yeah, he stays after that year, and then the following year gets a job at SC.
Got it. So you took another opportunity to go up to where you're at now.
I did, man.
How did that situation happen? You had the Final Four again?
Nah, man. Lucky enough, I'm driving back home from Arkansas. I get a call from Coach Trav. I'm just talking and, you know, asked about the job.
And you know Coach Trav from where, though? How
does
that...
So I knew of Trav from... he was on the board for the BCA, the Black Coaches Association.
Yeah.
I'm a part of that. I'm a member of that. So I kind of knew of him, but never really had, like, a true conversation with him. I was glad when he called, picked the phone up, spoke briefly, was just kind of, like, talking for a little bit. Then he brought up the job. And similar situation to Gus. I'm like, man, I'll be there tomorrow. Like, if like, what do you need? I'll be there tomorrow. So then that's kind of how that situation happened. Like, luckily, Gus was, and I give Gus a lot of credit, man. Like, Gus was working for me when I didn't know he was working for me. Like, there are coaches on that staff that are connected to Gus. And somehow, man, my name got picked out of that hat, man. And I'm just lucky to be there right now. You know,
man, your character got you everywhere you're at.
And yeah,
I want you to know that.
I want to give other people. Yeah, I say luck, but like I want to give other people credit for that as well. My guy,
like, man, your character is what spoke volumes to all these people and places that are getting you.
Thank you
to these opportunities, man. Like that's what it is. Nobody's gonna talk about like they're talking about you when you're not there before you're even there.
That you know
what
huge, I mean? Bro.
And yeah, that's because how you. The impression you leave on people, how you leave a room, how you show love, how the genuine part of you and that leader that was birthed in you from those talks with your mom in the car, going to school growing up.
Real talk.
And you said your dad was a principal.
Yeah.
He's a natural leader too. Or he probably built some natural leadership skills in you. And so I believe everything is about leadership.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you can develop those skills to be a leader, it can open up doors that only God can open.
Real talk.
And you know, your character and leadership can open. And so, man, the, like, sky is the real limit for you, man.
Man, I appreciate that.
And whatever you're doing, as you stay who you are and continue to grow and keep that same mindset. Also, I love the mindset and attitude that, hey, I gotta work because I don't belong here.
Bro.
But you belong here.
Yeah, yeah, no, see?
I know, I love, yeah. I want you to know, I'm going to say it because you can do, your self-talk is getting you where you want to be. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you because we don't do it enough. Like, you belong every room you step in.
My God.
Because God is already predestined for you, one, and two, because you work your butt off.
Real talk.
And so, don't feel like you don't belong. Have that same chip on your shoulder. But man, you belong everywhere you're supposed to be.
I appreciate that.
You know what I mean? So, man.
I appreciate that for you.
Keep going, man. I can't wait till you're a head coach somewhere crazy.
My God.
And I'm going to just remember this talk. Y'all, listen, you're going to be in the video. Ryan Silver said it first. I'll say it second. Yeah, all right. Probably more, you know, whoever else has said it. But, man, like, that's crazy, man. I'm telling you this because this is what my mentor tells me. Like, man, you belong. Like, this is who you are.
And
like,
I appreciate that.
We need to hear that for our confidence and for what we've worked for in our life. That, man, we're going to live in this moment that we're supposed to be right here talking for.
1,000%.
And this isn't even for us.
1,000%.
This is for somebody who's listening. 1,000%. This is for somebody in the future who is going to get connected through us because we're connected. It's just bigger than us,
yeah.
But we belong in this moment. And so
100%.
Know that and keep using that other part for that fuel.
For sure.
Yeah, keep it burning, man.
For sure.
That's dope. So, man, what's Montana like, man? It sounds boring.
Yeah, man. So when Trav called me and talked about Montana, I had no idea where it was on the map.
Oh, you one of those.
Bro,
y'all don't know y'all state, so listen.
Bro, had no idea.
Right? You young people, you. Like, y'all need to go get on that. My wife did this too. I'm like, we're looking at, I said, hey, can you name the state? She's like, California, Texas, Florida. I think that's Kansas.
Yeah.
Wait, you don't know your states?
Yeah, bro, I got lock
all 50, I got lock even in. The ones on the East Coast, like, we had to know that in the fourth grade as a test.
Yeah, I had to lock
they
in.
Don't teach all that no more.
They did not.
It's not important. They so not. They're trying to
sing the song.
Exactly.
You just sing the song and name them.
Exactly.
You don't know where they are and what they look like. And it's so wild to me. You literally didn't know
where Montana was. Bro, I had no idea where Montana was.
All right, back to regular schedule programming. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, had no idea where it was. Looked at it on Google, found it was at the top.
it's the big state,
bro.
At the top.
Yes. Bro, so, yeah, man, I forgot the question. Like, you're
man,
okay. So
you didn't know where
it's,
it was.
I had no idea where it was. Had no nothing. I didn't know anything about it other than it was very cold. So when I got there in the summer, it blew me away.
Because
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
The scenery. Like, you're like right next to the mountains where you feel like you can touch them. The sun doesn't go down until 10 o'clock.
Wait,
like,
what?
The sun does not go down until 10 o'clock. It's beautiful. It's like, imagine going on a hike or something.
I like dark, but that's dark.
Yeah, but just the experience, like, man, it's nice, man. The thing I'm getting used to is the snow, because they don't teach us Californians how to drive in the snow. So I'm, you know, my first little experience, I'm sliding and all that. I'm scared. I'm not trying to do this. But then, you know, you just kind of get used to it. We have phenomenal people, like a really good college atmosphere to where, you know, our players and, you know, they really get loved on by the community, which I think is unique in this climate of college basketball, man.
Yeah, and I've never heard a player who went to Montana and did didn't like the culture.
That's funny because, like, when I'm recruiting guys, it's like trying to sell that. You know what I mean? Like, because it's almost hard for you to believe it until you get on campus. So, like, the period before you get on campus, like, hyping it up, that's the hardest part. It's the hardest part. But when you get there, you're sold.
Right.
You're sold.
No, that's how you guys get good players.
1,000%.
In that level. So, recruiting, right? And so this is just information for the listeners.
Okay.
As a mid-major school, what are you looking for in players? How can I prepare to be recruited by a school like Montana?
Toughness. competitiveness. Obviously, the ability to shoot is very important. Size and skill is important. I know that's kind of like general.
Yeah.
But I know that's important. But the first two, toughness and competitiveness, or the if you can teach anything to or give any advice to any kid, show that all the time. Winning by 50, losing by 50. Missed a shot, made a shot. Like if you can just be consistent in that, it's a huge separator.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know what I mean, like that's one thing that has surprised me. It's a skill set. A skill set is playing hard now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. How do you develop toughness though?
It's a good question.
I'm a trainer. I'm a basketball trainer. I train middle school, high school kids. How do I develop toughness?
You put them in situations where they have to experience adversity and you don't help them. You know what I mean? Like it's like,
are your parents gonna let you do that?
Hey man, that's how I know. Like yes. That, you know, you have to go through.
Yeah.
You gotta go through, not around. And I think that getting more experiences of going through builds your toughness.
Yeah. That's the only knock on California kids, is that we saw. It is a thing. It is because.
But that's because we're entitled too, though.
Right?
We're entitled.
Let these kids go through some rough and let them do it early. Nobody's watching your kid in middle school.
Come on,
you
man.
You don't recruit middle
school.
Come on,
school. Man. Come on.
Let
man.
Them go through all the bad coaching, bad teammate. Let them go through all that and let them prevail. Because that's going to let you know if they love this game or
and
not.
And those experiences are valuable for them in their basketball journey. All of them. Like, you know, like we talked about playing, you know, coming off the bench, being a starter, being the guy that shoots every shot, trying to find your spot. Like, it's very valuable because in your journey, you will experience, unless you're LeBron or Mike, or you will experience something like that.
Yeah.
Jason Tatum didn't get off the bench for one game.
So, and then
the finals MVP. You know what I mean? So it's like you will experience something similar.
Yeah.
And if you can experience a lot of those early on, you'll know how to handle them as you experience when you get older.
That's toughness. I like that.
Yeah.
Overcoming adversity.
1,000%. Yeah. That's how I define it.
100%. Man, I don't know what else to cover as far as, man, what you've been doing. Looking forward to seeing you coach this year and you know, seeing what you guys do as a group. You guys got a lot of talent.
I appreciate that.
You guys have a lot of opportunity to be great.
Yeah.
So
shout out to you and Malik, man.
So you got my boy Malik.
Shout out
man.
To you,
so,
man.
You know, looking forward to seeing B-Wit, just watching B-Wit. You
killer,
know,
bro.
Yeah, like just watching them. Who else? Any other California kids?
We got a lot of California kids from Southern California. We got Zach Davidson.
Oh yeah.
Who would please don't kill me for saying this. He tells me this all the time. He's a modern day legend. that's viewers, don't kill me for saying that. But those are our three guys from SoCal.
No, it's gonna be dope watching you guys. You guys have any big names on the schedule?
Preseason? We do. Our schedule hasn't released yet, so I can't tell you that yet. But okay. We'll have some Big Ten, Big 12, and SEC opponents on the non-conference schedule.
Love
it. So let's rock.
Let's
rock.
Awesome, man. Man, thanks for sharing your
Always.
Journey, man. We're going to move to our next segment, man. My Rushmore. All right, so your top four. You're a point guard.
Yeah.
And I want them true point guard.
Yeah.
Like, you know
yeah.
what a point guard is.
Yeah.
Toughness, yeah. defense, leader. Your top four point guards all time.
So, mine number one. Number 1A, I guess, is Magic Johnson. Number 1B is Rajon Rondo. Number 2 is Chris Paul, you know. And number 3, 4, whatever, would be Steve Nash.
Man, wow.
Yeah, those would be my Mount Rushmore.
Hey, man, you got 3 of my 4.
Bro, like,
but
those are the guys.
Yeah.
Those are my guys. Like, right, those
so,
are
so,
my guys.
Man, I love that 4. I have Steve Nash and Rondo always on my top 4. I'm probably going to mess this up. This has been asked and changes a lot. You know my 4 right there. So I have Steve Nash.
Okay.
I think Steve Nash revolutionized the point guard position. Rondo is a genius.
Bro,
it's
my favorite player ever.
I've been able to work with him, and it is.
You're so lucky.
Oh, I am.
You're so lucky.
6 a.m. for a whole summer.
You're so lucky.
A school.
You're so lucky.
A point guard school. school.
I think he's one of the smartest basketball players to ever touch a basketball. And I'm saying that for, like, I've never had a conversation with him, just as a viewer to see how he manipulates the game. It is, like, incredible.
Ridiculous. And then I have, give me a second because you're going to mess me up. Steph Curry-ish.
Okay.
I don't know if he's a point guard. Right?
I'll let you throw that in there.
She's seeing about, see, Steph Curry's on there, yes?
Continue.
Good. And then I actually have Jason Kidd.
Wow. Yeah, it's a good one. Man, I'm not bad. I'm not bad about that one. California.
Yeah, man. Eyes behind his head. Defender. Mm-hmm.
Tough. Like, got good size.
Yep. All that. Like, all that. And so.
Rondo's the reason why. Rondo, go ahead. Go ahead.
I know who it is.
Go ahead.
I'm taking away Steph Curry. Steph Curry's a hybrid guard.
Okay.
He's a little bit different. Okay. Russell Westbrook.
Is your respect.
Yeah, man. No.
That wasn't who originally, from the first time you got asked.
First time? Okay, sorry. Who was my four a year and a half
Magic,
ago?
Magic, Steve Nash, Jason Kidd, and Rondo.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, see?
Yeah. That's a good list.
All right, so Magic.
Russell, this is new.
No.
First time Steph Curry was this.
He likes Russ. He likes Russ now.
So, yeah, it's Curry I put in this hybrid guard situation.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook for me, man.
That's just a dog.
Just, yeah.
A
like
dog.
That intensity, competitiveness, man, he very just Kendrick Lamar with his game. Like,
real talk.
I like it.
Rondo is the reason why I was turning the ball over, bro.
Well,
that's the reason.
That's
the reason. That is the reason, bro. That is the reason. That is the reason, man.
I like that, man. That's inspiration.
For sure. That's my guy, man.
All right, man. Our next segment is called Fix the Net. You see the net there? Man, I have a ball. A misconception about Ruben.
Oh.
You want the world to know what the truth is. So you tell us the misconception, the truth, and go ahead and fix it.
The misconception was that I only, since I coached with West Coast Elite, that was the only AAU program that I was rocking with. I love everybody. I love everybody. I love everybody. We have phenomenal grassroots basketball out here in Southern California. We have great people that are investing in kids and doing it for the right reasons. And that is why I love everybody, all the AAU programs in Southern California. So that is my misconception, man.
Spread the love.
Always.
And this is where we flip the script.
Okay.
And two questions for me. Could be about anything in the world.
What is the big, you know, you deal with kids. Right? Like, kids have aspirations to play basketball, I guess. What's your biggest pet peeve in that space right now?
I'm thinking of the way to word it. I know exactly
for
what
sure.
it is. I want to say unrealistic or ignorant parents who don't allow the expert to be the expert.
I like that.
Because you're getting in the way of your child truly developing. Once you let go, and when we say trust the process, I say follow the blueprint.
Okay.
Once you follow the blueprint for this, there's a blueprint to this from middle school through high school to get to college. Mm-hmm. I have it mastered, been doing it for 10 years. And the results speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
From kids who've barely ever touched a basketball entering middle school to the number one player in the country in middle school, mm-hmm. it has worked over time. There's a blueprint. Get out of the way.
Facts.
Because one way or the other, your kid might still develop and reach their goals, but that journey they take adds all type of trauma to their mm-hmm. life and scarring that doesn't necessarily need to happen now.
Yeah.
All things work for the good. You know, you turn those into good situations, but the fastest way to success is a mentor.
For sure.
Get somebody who's done it before.
That's powerful.
And it's not just me, because I think it's all over the country, probably all over the world. Find somebody who's done it and just follow the script. Not every kid is the same. I don't put every kid on the same journey, but I give every kid a blueprint to what the journey looks like for them. That makes sense.
I like
there's
that.
A way for everybody to win if you get out of the way. You're going to be at whatever level you're supposed to be at.
Yeah.
You put the work in
yeah.
to be at that level.
Yeah.
Period.
That's real.
That's it. There's no other way through it. There's no coach that's going to miss out on getting a kid who is good
that's real.
And doing what they're supposed to
yeah.
and fits their situation.
Yeah.
And so parents, I love y'all. But I love y'all kids more.
I like that.
And I want them to be successful. It's not about you.
I like that.
And so I have information for you to how, not to have a parent, but how a parent of a student athlete can be successful as a parent, not their manager, not their other coach, unless you have experience there. And man, that's my biggest thing. So my biggest thing is education, parent education, and child education.
I like that.
I want to give you the game, and it's free. There's a college coach on this show, and do I pay you anything?
Not at all.
You had to pay gas when you were here in traffic. And you're giving the game away for free. If you listen to your journey, you are the most
the real. I'm the more. Yeah.
Player.
Yes. Yes. I'm the majority.
In Southern California, if he can make it to a D3 and play it.
Yeah.
Right.
Real talk.
And then now do what you're doing after the ball stopped bouncing for you on the court.
Real talk.
Man, the script is free. The game is free, and you have access to this. Through me. DM me. I answer DMs. You answer DMs probably
For sure.
As long as it's in compliance.
1,000%. 1,000%.
So, yeah, man.
My second question, obviously we're kind of connected to similar people in the basketball space. Who's somebody that you think I should be connected to that you might not think I am?
Well, you met him earlier. One is Horace,
okay.
Who's downstairs, okay. The point guardian of the Galaxy.
Got you.
His journey, his knowledge on the game is just, it's different, man. He's, I don't know where he came from. A lot like you, leadership at a young age, small guard who knew how to do it. So he ended up playing overseas for like 10 years. And like, just his career is amazing. So Horace.
That's what's really up, okay, that's Horace. The one.
But somebody I think you should connect with, man, who's been a just wealth of knowledge for me in this game. Man, you know everybody I know. That's the other part.
I'm lucky, man.
Yeah,
I'm lucky.
You know a lot of people I know.
Anybody that you'll shout out, though, has been huge as a mentor for you.
As a mentor for me, just in life, is Tony McGee, man. He's a rocket scientist, and man, just a invested in me from the time he met me. His son was in core.
That's what's
son up. Is over at Chaminade now, going into his junior year. Another undersized guard.
Yeah.
He's just phenomenal. He could play. And he's just been speaking life into me for every step of the way.
It's huge.
And I encourage everyone to get a mentor and finding somebody who believes in you, who speaks life, holds you accountable, and also gives you, he gave me a prophecy over my life.
God.
Like out of nowhere, and it just unfolded. As soon as he said it, it just started unfolding, and it's still unfolding to this day. And we were just talking, literally talking about it right before you came here. We were on the phone, and that mentorship. I always believed that you should one have God, right, have your foundation, and then two have a mentor, and then three be mentoring somebody. I think you should always be passing knowledge to someone else because. It's your growth. Now you're growing, right? It's that as you climb the ladder, you're pulling people up with you, but you still moving forward. And just understanding that process and accepting that mentorship.
It's huge.
I connect with
Please
you,
do. Tony. Nah, Please do.
Man, he's dope, man. He's a dope dude who just wants to invest in people.
That's all we need, man.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me, man.
No. You have a 24-second shot clock. Let people know where they can find you on social media and any message that you have for the people.
Coach Rube, Coach_Rube, R-E-U-B on Twitter. The message that I have for the people, go through the adversity, not around it. And when you get, when you find people that are real ones in your circle, hold on to them very, very tight. That's my message.
Appreciate you being on the show, brother.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. That's all we have for you today, folks. We'll see you next time. Peace.